He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys. All right.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to our listeners. And let's start by reviewing 2021 and see where we go in 2022. Yeah. So I was just looking at a few numbers, and you know, we know that actually I didn't realize how much the car market had shrunk in 2021 relative to 2020, and that is mostly due to, as we know, the chip shortage. So car sales in the U.S. were down about 13%. And by the same token, electrified vehicles, that is, electric cars, electric vehicles, and hybrids were up more than 60%. Sales in those vehicles were up more than 60%. So big changes in the automotive landscape. And I think one of the biggest takeaways from this is that consumers have had to revise the way they buy cars. And I've been advocating for this kind of business model for a while. And basically, it is that, you know, instead of going on the car lot and picking your car, you pre-order your car and you patiently wait for it to be produced and delivered to the dealer. And then you go and take ownership. But that's what's happening. As we know, and as Robin has mentioned a lot of times, there are fewer and fewer cars on dealer lots, and dealers have had to adapt the way they sell vehicles because they can't push them on us anymore. So I think that's the biggest change for 2022.
And do you think that that is a good thing?
I think it's a great thing.
Yeah.
I think, and manufacturers have been aware of that for a long time. You know, there was a time, and I forget the exact numbers. I think it was a few years ago. I remember reading that at the time, Chrysler had over 100,000 vehicles that they owned that were produced that were sitting on car lots around the country, whether it was their own car lots or just dealers. Car lots, and all those vehicles have to be financed. It's just a huge amount of money just sitting there, and it really gives the consumer not much choice. You pretty much buy what is on the lot, and that's how dealers upsold you. I am a big believer in, you know, you go in, you order your car. I lived in Europe decades ago, and, you know, typically it took 4 to 6 weeks to get a car produced and delivered. And you got it in the color you wanted with the options you wanted and not the ones you did not want.
Yeah, so. And, you know, Robin always chides me for telling the story, but it's really annoying to get your heart set on something and then have someone give you, you know, attempt to give you something else and then say, you have to take this. So,
right.
There are elements of that business that, how do you say, have long been in need of adjustment. It just hasn't been the time, I guess.
Well, there are historic reasons for that, and you know, companies like Tesla have tried to break that mold, and I've said it numerous times. I think one of the biggest changes that Tesla will bring, I think, over time is trying to break that franchise model that dealerships operate under nowadays. I mean, dealerships are protected in every state in different manners, but there are still states where Tesla is not allowed to sell directly, and that is changing, and states are making exceptions, and I know Michigan was one of those states. I don't know what the exact laws are in each one of the states, but there are still states where you cannot buy a Tesla, where you cannot buy a car directly from the manufacturer. But you know, those laws are not likely to change anytime soon, or not be not disappear anytime soon. But I think that dealers will adapt to these changes. There's no doubt in my mind, and it's a good thing.
Okay, I think dealers will be able to. Do you think? I'm more curious about consumers, mostly because you know some of the joy. Some of the joy, in my view, has been sort of removed by this fear marketing of, you know, I don't have a problem with calling Carvana, if you know what you're doing and you understand that you're actually doing business with a loan shark, you'll forgive me, prettied up in a different in some nice clothes, but. You know, caveat emptor and all of that. But what I do object to is disempowering. I've just invented that word for the new year. Of the consumer, you know, it's like terrifying them. It's like, oh, you're so just point and click because you don't know anything, and they're gonna, you know, they're going to they're going to take advantage of you. So you're better off to just click and point and then we'll send you something. And that I think takes some of the I mean, obviously, that's not everybody, but that is a big segment of the buying or of a group of buyers. And I just think that's sad because the funds, that, you know, it's just, it's not as much fun as looking at the various things and, you know, deciding what suits you.
Well, I mean, I think that the trend, I mean, we've been online shopping for some time now. I mean, just think of the changes in our habits and behavior, you know, generally speaking, over the last 10 years. I can see, you know, in the last 2 to 3 years, you know, whether we like it or not, a lot of us order a lot of stuff from Amazon. It's easy. It's convenient. If you know what you're buying, it just makes it a more relaxed experience. And buying a car now, I think cars, like everything else, everybody's an expert, right? You Google stuff, you do your own research, you pretty much have a good idea. You could have a pretty good idea of what you're buying, you know, in a vehicle before you click. And I would say, you know, the test drive days are almost kind of over, in my opinion, just because every car on the market really drives pretty well. You're not going to push a car. You know, the time when you went and did a little 3 mile circle where you pushed on the brakes to see if they worked and stepped on the gas to see if it you know, if the car had any pep. Those days are over. All these cars can do a lot more than what you're allowed to do on public roads anyway. To me, the biggest thing is, you know, is the seat comfortable? I have a bad back. The last car, I think it was the last car I purchased, my Volkswagen Touareg, I had never sat in a Volkswagen Touareg before. And when I went down to Georgia to pick it up, it took me a while to get used to the seat. I had to Mickey Mouse quite a bit with the seat settings to find a comfortable position. And I did have, for part of the 800-mile drive back, somewhat of a buyer's remorse because I thought, I'm never going to be comfortable in this car. And it took me a while, and I am comfortable in it. But to me, that is the one thing you risk, is not being comfortable in the car. You know, everything else, you can look online. Yeah, you don't get the smell when you're buying it new, but they all pretty much smell the same these days.
Right, but that story about not being comfortable is key. And I'm not, you know, I've never been much of a test driver, you know, because whereas Robin, you know, has always objected to not being able to take the car, you know, and lap it at the local track. You know, I've never, turn right, turn left, whatever. But not feeling right in the car is a whole different story. And I'm one of those people that if I hate something at the beginning, I am not as good as probably my mother would have liked me to be about saying, oh, well, that's really, you know, oh, that's fine now. It just doesn't happen.
Right. But I think, yes. but there are enough of every single car out there that, you know, we all know somebody. I mean, yeah, there are ways of getting to at least sit in the car and ride in the car.
Absolutely, and that's, you know, just like when you see somebody wearing a nice outfit, and you go, oh, how did you put that together? I'm not saying you have to do that as a dealership at all. I'm simply saying that the fun, you know, that the fun part of it is finding a vehicle that you are comfortable in, finding a vehicle, and this is if you have the luxury of doing that, you know, getting something that you like. That's that's all I'm talking about. And then order it online. I don't care. That's not.
Yeah. So we go and I think a few manufacturers started to. And when I used to live in Belgium, you know, 20, 30 years ago, a few manufacturers started to a model where they would have showroom and test centers that were not dealerships. Like you could go and test the car, and they would not try to sell you the car. And you would just go, and you could see the cars and sit in them, kind of a you know, like when you go to the car show in New York, you know. But every manufacturer had their own little car show with a test center. So maybe we'll go in that direction, but that's not in any time soon.
All right. And did you have any either favorite moments, or I found this thing, I don't know whether you saw it. It was in the Wall Street Journal on the 27th of December, and it was our favorite rides of 2021. And
I did not. What were they? Just so I can.
Okay, so you have to compare and contrast with them. Okay, so because some are old, but one. A Factory 5 Daytona Coupe.
Okay, that's a very limited
exactly
production car, right?
Exactly. And then somebody loved their MGB, which was like, yeah, I understand that. I had one, right? Got that. And then there was somebody, the 1957 Ford with flower wagon power. You know about
okay.
that?
Okay, but those are none of those are
no,
like,
none of those are current
current. I'm trying to think. I did not drive a lot of new and different cars. I'm waiting to get the opportunity to drive a Porsche Taycan, but that's not going to be before sometime, hopefully, in the middle or the end of next year, that I know somebody who I hope will let me test drive it. That's a hint if he's listening. Nothing really exciting. Here's my problem. I'm finding it with you know, the rise of these high performance electric cars. The traditional performance cars or sports cars have not become irrelevant, but kind of taken a back seat. I mean, you know, Tesla's producing the fastest production car in the world, and it's a sedan. How can you get excited by anything else after you know, seeing or driving one of those? I've not driven a Tesla Plaid, but I hate to say it. I've kind of lost some interest in cars.
Well, then I guess you won't be doing the show anymore, huh?
This is not where I wanted to go, but. But I think electric, I mean, it's back to electric cars. I mean, I think that's where the future is.
Right.
I think that's where the future is for a bunch of reasons. You know, I think the cost of ownership and has been demonstrated is going to be lower over time. Again, there's big changes in the industry. You know, I hate to talk about Tesla over and over and over again, but they produced close to 1 million cars last year, which was up over 80% of what they produced in 2020. They still own 70% of the electric car market here in the U.S. And there are more and more competitors coming on the market, and some of them are very valuable competitors, both from legacy manufacturers. You know, we're looking at seeing the Chevy Silverado pickup truck being introduced this week, presented to the press this week. The Ford F-150 Lightning has been announced for a long time now. There are new manufacturers like Lucid Air and Rivian. I know somebody who just placed an order for a new Rivian SUV. It's a $1,000 deposit. Rivian has 70,000 pre-orders right now. And we'll see how long it takes them to get into full production mode, seeing as they only produced, I think, less than 1,200 vehicles in 2021. But I think that's where the excitement is really this big change in the automotive landscape.
Right, and what's the story with batteries? I mean, are they that hard to, like, what's the real, when I say real, what's the...
I don't know.
Well, mining the batteries and so forth. You know, it's like, oh, this is all great, just don't look over here. And I'm wondering how diabolical it really is. That's what I'm kind of asking.
We need to look into that a bit more, arguably. And I don't have the answer to that.
No, I just think that it's worth it. You know, there's so much selective thinking around everything that... you know, it's, which is fine. I just, as I said, I was just curious about the real situation with that.
I don't know, to be quite honest.
Okay.
Something else I wanted to talk about. Subaru recall. Robin is usually the one who brings up all the manufacturers' recalls, and I don't follow those very closely. But my daughter just went through an interesting experience. She's got a 2013 Subaru Impreza with about 70,000 miles on it. So it hasn't been driven all that much. And so she had a noise with the car, and we brought it to a local car shop here, and the owner of the shop test drove it and looked at me and had this look on his face saying, this is not good. So he said, you know, take it to Subaru because they have been replacing these transmissions under warranty. And sure enough, it took her two phone calls, two different dealerships in the southern part of Connecticut. And one of them immediately, you know, looked up the VIN number on the car and said, okay, yes, bring it in. And not only did they replace the transmission under warranty, and they also did a valve job on the engine, because some of those engines in 2012, 2013 were burning a lot of oil. And so they did major work on the car, okay, something that would have cost probably $5,000 to $10,000 out of pocket. No questions asked. They gave her a loaner car that she had for 3 weeks and gave her the keys to the car back, and off she went. So... here's the moral of the story. There are issues with those Subaru CVT transmissions, of which I am a big fan. And if you do have an issue, bring it to a dealer. I mean, I know that we live in a remote area where a lot of people bring their cars to local car shops to have them serviced. And that's fine. That's great. But if you get a recall or if there's any question about major work to be done, it is worth bringing back to a dealer because, you know, you may be pleasantly surprised the work can be done under warranty.
Right, and that's something that some people don't think about and should, especially when it's that massif, as they say.
Yeah, she's got a brand new car.
Yeah, but that's part, it's just, it's also interesting. I had a tangential type experience with VW, where it's, oh, yes. Well, now that you mention it, here, let us take
well,
this.
Well, and again, you know, I mentioned that she had to call two dealers, and because there was a dealer next to the school she goes to, and she wanted to have it fixed there because it was more convenient. And I said, well, call another dealer first, you know, just to get the story and see if they're going to be cooperative or not. And the first dealer she called, which was further away from where she lives and from her school, was right on top of it and offered right away, said, yes, the car is, you know, there is a recall, we'll cover it under warranty. The second dealer really tried to tell her that there was, you know, that she was wrong, There was nothing wrong with the car, or it was another problem. And so she ended up going to that dealer that was further away. So if you have an issue, you know, don't be shy. Call several dealers.
Yeah, very smart. All right, safety tips, since we're actually...
Safety tips. Just watch the video. You know, we all watch these videos on all the social media, and it's just a... I'm looking at a pickup truck, a car making a pass on a double yellow line and having a head-on collision, and it's on a dash cam. And it just made me think, you know, double yellow lines are there for a reason. And sometimes, and we live in an area where we mostly drive on secondary roads, right? Not a lot of state roads and not a lot of, and certainly not a lot of highways. Those double lines are there for a reason. Don't pass on a double yellow line. We all know of some areas, long stretches of road here that look straight. And you may think you can see everything in the distance, but sometimes it's just a side street. You know, you're making a pass and somebody's pulling out of a side street coming the other way, and did not think that you were that there might be somebody coming from the other direction. So double lines mean no passing. Also, if you're going to make a pass, and I know this is a problem because you know, the law says you cannot pass the speed limit even to make a pass. Well, it's very hard to make. It takes a long time to make a pass if the difference in speed between two vehicles is only a few miles per hour. So plan your passes, and if there's a double line, do not pass.
And I will just say that somewhere in the driver's manual is something that makes that real clear. Like, it's even a depiction that that someone who's not good with those diagrams can sort out.
What driver's manual are you talking about?
Oh, you know, the old... the one that you've studied, read backward and forward, and can pass the test on at any given moment. Multiple choice. In the language
right.
that you choose.
The one that makes you a driver.
That's the one.
All right.
He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.